greetings once again, dear listeners, and thank you for joining us here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, your host for the remainder of this hour, and you are listening to Datum Line. In our previous Datum Line broadcast, entitled Economic Myths and the Science of Deceit, Part 32, we concluded our discussion of a popular myth that the international bankers own the gold and silver that was confiscated from the American people in 1934 and 1965, respectively. Our premise has been that lawful title to those monetary metals did not and could not pass from the victims of fraud to the perpetrators thereof, although this is widely believed by many Federal Reserve critics who give credence to the myth by repeating it. During that last message, we also offered some biblical support to the principle of twofold restitution, that not only an individual, but a nation defrauded of its lawful money or some tangible asset has the right before God to receive double from the offending party, that which was stolen. A few circumstances also exist where the scriptures authorize more than a twofold restitution. This, of course, begs a question as to how the international bankers could possibly return twice as much gold or silver as they sequestered from the public. But their inability to pay full restitution is answered in Exodus chapter 22 and verse 3, where the offender is sold into bondage to pay the balance he owes in productive labor. Several months ago, American Free Press reported that a few high-placed bankers over in Iran were charged with egregious financial misconduct and were given the death sentence. Pursuant to Section 19 of the original Coinage Act of 1792, a U.S. Treasury official found guilty of debasing our gold or silver coins could have suffered the same fate. Today, they'd probably get a promotion. If the bankers prized our gold and silver so much as to steal it, then they could extract some more of it from the various gold and silver mines scattered around the globe, and thereby resolve the alleged gold and silver shortage we're constantly being told about by the friends of credit. While there is a biblical argument for restitution, which we covered briefly, there's also a biblical reason why it hasn't happened yet, and is probably not going to happen until we make some meaningful and substantial changes in our individual and national conduct. In the Revelation letter at chapter 18, we're told of a grand economic system that suffers a devastating collapse in the space of an hour. Babylon the Great, as it's called, was not built overnight or in a vacuum, however. It replaced another system which had to be destroyed. Over the course of several centuries, every economic system that once characterized European Christian culture was subjected to an insidious adversary hitherto unknown. Credit had become a weapon. Instead of lending tangible gold or silver on credit at interest, bankers began lending imaginary credit on credit at interest. Prior to the age of modern banking that began about 400 years ago, bankers of ancient Babylon loaned tangible silver at interest, which they recorded in loan contracts made of baked clay tablets, some of which are still preserved in the British Museum. Those clay tablets are mentioned in the Bible, but didn't make much of an impression when we first read about it. Woe to him that increaseth that which is not his, how long, and to him that ladeth himself with thick clay, said Habakkuk in chapter 2 and verse 6, written about 600 B.C., or 2,600 years ago. Just like today, however, people back then were going in debt to acquire what it was that they didn't own. The prophet Habakkuk wanted to know how long this foolishness was going to continue. He called the public's debt burden a load of thick clay, since their loan contracts were written on baked clay tablets. Our monetary systems of gold, silver, and copper gave way to growing addiction to bank credit, which finally replaced the last of our substantive money, silver, about 50 years ago. Credit was the essential ingredient necessary to create a centrally planned and regulated global economic system, its political arm known to many of us as socialism. By integrating all of the socialist credit systems of the world into an ecumenical political economy, subject to the IMF and World Bank, would result in universal socialism, which Karl Marx called communism. By retaining our respective national monetary units of measure, like the dollar, peso, yen, and so forth, during this period of transition, we preserve the illusion of economic independence that was put to rest for our European cousins by the transnational currency unit called the euro. Prior to this century, and without the collectivizing influence of credit, also known as fiat money, an economic collapse of global proportions would have been impossible, since individual countries, like individual families, pursued a course of economic independence without which they were vulnerable to potentially destructive outside cultural influences. A virtually endless supply of credit, however, would fuel a universal weakness of mankind, the desire for material gain that becomes an addiction. Here in America, it's a major competitive sport where we keep up with the Joneses or else beat them in a frantic race to bankruptcy. The North American Union is proceeding more cautiously, or perhaps covertly, than the European Union. And no doubt this is necessary to avoid detection and widespread opposition. Formulation of a global economic system, of which the EU and North American Union are major components, began long before the end of World War II. That war, however, was the catalyzing event used to justify a global socialist governing apparatus called the United Nations that arose from the 1945 San Francisco Conference like a modern Tower of Babel. Our younger listeners might appreciate a little background on the early development of the UN, which, in concert with the World Trade Organization, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and other global organizations, may very well be Babylon the Great, as referenced in the Revelation letter during our last message. Conditioning an independent American public to accept the idea of national subordination to a global government would not be easy, so it proceeded in small, rather innocuous steps. President Franklin D. Roosevelt is credited with having coined the name United Nations in 1945 to identify the countries that were joined in combat against the Axis powers of Germany, Italy, and Japan. The name, United Nations, was first used officially on January 1, 1942, when a published declaration by the United Nations was ratified by 26 countries that were pledged to defeat the Axis powers. Major Racy Jordan identified the United Nations as a name given to the Allied forces beginning in 1942. This reference appeared in his book entitled From Major Jordan's Diaries, which detailed the astronomical military aid given to the Soviet Union by the United States, his official duties being to expedite that flow of materiel and information, which also included details of the Manhattan Project for the nuclear bomb. Americans were stunned when the Soviets detonated their first nuclear device in 1949, unaware that this technology was a legacy of an FDR giveaway program called Lend-Lease. Well, today's message, I guess it's got to have a title, so let's call it Economic Myths and the Science of Deceit, Part 33. We will, on the other side of this upcoming break, go into a little bit more detail on the beginning phases of the United Nations, which I am attempting to link with Babylon the Great that appears in the Revelation letter. We'll then spend some time explaining how the wording concerning a feminine harlot could be appropriate to an economic system. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, and you are listening to That Am I. segment of Datum Line. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy. Today's message, Economic Myths and the Science of Deceit, Part 33. On the other side of this first break, we were talking about the formulation of the United Nations, a global governance apparatus, justification for an international organization to replace the earlier League of Nations, which was created after World War I, was formally announced in the Moscow Declaration issued by the United States, Great Britain, the Soviet Union, and China on October 30th, 1943. See, now the war wasn't going to end until the middle of 1945. A year later, those same four countries drafted proposals for a charter to create a permanent United Nations organization at the Dumbarton Oaks Conference, which was held from August to October of 1944. In February of 1945, still the war is not over, three of those four countries, the United States, Great Britain, and Soviet Union, were represented at the Yalta Conference by President Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, and Joseph Stalin, where they decided on the post-war division of Germany and Eastern Europe, all of Eastern Europe being handed over to Soviet occupation. It was at Yalta that these potentates decided to invite France and China to help sponsor the conference in San Francisco, which created the legal framework for the United Nations only 2 to 4 months later, that being between April and June of 1945. In January of 1946, the United Nations General Assembly held its first conference in London, where it was decided to locate their new headquarters in the eastern United States. A grandiose idea goes nowhere, of course, without the economic wherewithal to make it happen. And it was not until December of 1946 that their fortune arrived from, guess who? John D. Rockefeller, Jr. That magnanimous and civic-minded soul with a vision for world harmony surpassing that of the Lord Jesus Christ himself. And those groveling toadies of global empire graciously accepted his gift of $8.5 million to acquire sufficient land along the East River in New York City to build their modern Tower of Babel. Imagine, the seat of global governance sits on Rockefeller-donated land. I'm reminded of an economic principle familiar to philanthropic tyrants that someone put to poetic meter many years ago. For this is the law, and the law shall run till the earth in its course is still, that whoso eateth another's bread shall do the other's will. Prior to 1930, John D. Rockefeller Sr. gave over $30 million in gold coin. Convert that into present-day bucks. We're talking billions. Over $30 million in gold coin to foreign Baptist missions alone. Why was he such a generous donor? Well, small gifts are generally given by people who want to support something. Large gifts are given people like the Rockefellers to control what it is that they're giving to. Revelation chapter 18 describes a great and mysterious economic system that spans the entire globe and is likened unto a harlot. Babylon the Great, as she's called, is identified as a type of tyranny, according to James Strong in his massive concordance to the Bible. The Greek New Testament word Babylon, from which we arrive at the word Babylon, is of Hebrew origin, the word being Babel, which means confusion. Our Datum Line broadcasts have attempted, from the beginning, 2 years ago, to demonstrate the connection between linguistic confusion and our modern system of interrelated religious, political, and economic tyranny, which is evolving into a one-world ecumenical system. Listeners unfamiliar with Scripture may think it strange that a political and economic tyranny would be characterized in the Word of God as a pompous and lewd woman. So let's take a moment to connect a few dots by letting the Bible interpret itself, after which we'll better appreciate the relevance of this figurative language as being quite appropriate. First, we'll lay a quick foundation from Revelation chapter 18 to positively identify this global tyranny as a lewd and haughty woman of 21st century feminist dimensions. Turning to Revelation chapter 18, I'll only read the first, maybe 10 verses. Verse 1, "And after these things I, John the Revelator, saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works. In the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in one hour is thy judgment come." Well, I'll stop there. To more clearly understand how this applies to the modern world in which we live, I've selected a pertinent reference from the Proverbs written by King Solomon at chapter 5, and we'll further narrow the scope of our inquiry to just verses 1 through 13. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 1, "My son, attend unto my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman," now think of Babylon the Great, which is defined or identified as a strange or lewd woman, "for the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her." Almost sounds like, "Come out of her, my people, be not partakers of her sins and of her plagues," in Revelation 18. "Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. Lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. And thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, How have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to them that instructed me." Well, many of you listeners are probably nodding your heads, having experienced some or all of these consequences firsthand. But I'll translate a few of these 17th century expressions into more familiar English. I guess I'll do that on the other side of this break, won't I? I won't do it now. Sounds like we've got some music. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy, and you're listening to Datum Line, today's message, Economic Myths and the Science of Deceit, Part 33.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back to this half of Datamline, Economic Myths and the Science of Deceit, Part 33. We're letting King Solomon in Proverbs chapter 5 flesh out and expand upon our understanding of what we read in Revelation chapter 18. In verse 3 of Proverbs chapter 5, we read about the lips of a strange woman, or maybe a newly discovered woman, and how that they're sweeter than honey. Now, some of you know all about that. Her tender words are smooth and seductive. In verse 5, we discover that all is not going well, however, with our new romance, a theme that so often runs through popular country music today. Her ways are movable. Your relationship is unstable. The rules of the game are changing. She's playing head games with you. She is deceitful and pursues a hidden agenda. You never know where you stand. Okay, ladies, you've been victimized by this as well. Such is the world we've all inherited and have made worse by our participation as survivalists who thought we could play this system, to beat the system. But that's another myth, often concealed before it's too late. As a consequence, we've become materialistic, cynical, sociopaths engaged in an undeclared civil war, a war that we have all but lost. Like the harlot of Proverbs chapter 5, the economic system dazzled us with promises of wealth, power, and prestige, which were like the lips of a harlot for sweetness. A credit card offering 0% interest, for example, would unlock a new world of economic bliss. But lo, the rules began to change when a payment deadline slipped by us. As things went from bad to worse in our relationship with this filthy harlot, new and surprising changes came in the mail or on the telephone. Tyranny arrives in pretty packages, however, with bright ribbons and bows, our names printed in nice big capital letters, from a return address of an important-sounding corporate, state, or federal agency, offering benefits without which, they say, life would not be worth living. They'd include insurance policies of every description, corporate status, tax reductions and tax exemptions, economic assistance programs by the bucketful, endless grants and subsidies, special licenses, permits, and a host of other privileges like low-income housing, aid to dependent children, women's infant care, food coupons, etc., ad nauseum. These benefits look so inviting, but no one seemed to ask about the hidden costs, like a loss of liberty amid a rising police state to subdue an increasingly immoral populace, bound by a new set of unknowable regulations that changed continually with the passing of time. People who applied, the word apply means beg, by the way, in legal contemplation, people who applied or begged for government largesse were generally made subordinate to increasingly more powerful and tyrannical states, which, in turn, became subservient to Uncle Sam, who took over their funding thanks to a very special printing press and federal legislation that compelled everyone to labor for what Congress and the Federal Reserve System get for nothing. After joining an unholy economic alliance about 70 years ago, Uncle Sam began to surrender his autonomy to an increasingly more powerful political and economic system that emerged from the East River shoreline of New York City in 1945. Like a chameleon, she changes color. Her names are many. She lurks in the shadows. Her ways are movable. She is unknowable. Tyranny governs by way of myriad revised statutes, like a shifting, invisible electric fence, ready to inflict its pain upon all who know not the bounds of liberty until contact is made with hidden danger. In Proverbs chapter 5 and verse 8, King Solomon admonishes his son to remove himself far from such a tyrannical woman. Likewise, Revelation 18 and verse 4 commands the people of God to come out of her, Babylon the Great, and be not partakers of her sins and her consequential plagues. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 9 and 10 introduce us to an insidious connection between a harlot and her victim, whose wealth, honor, physical health, energy, and longevity are ravaged by the vicious and unholy relationship. The harlot feeds on her victims and is nourished by the experience, while the victims wither and die. Remove thy wayfarer from her, Solomon said, and come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, thy years unto the cruel, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. Proverbs chapter 5, verses 8 through 10. Well, these sentiments are repeated in Proverbs chapter 31 at verse 3 by King Lemuel, a name which literally means belonging to God. Lemuel is thought by some Bible scholars to be a symbolic name for King Solomon, and thought by others to be an Arab king, the brother of Agur, spoken of in Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 1. Whoever Lemuel is, he agrees with the advice of Solomon given to his son in Proverbs chapter 5, where in Proverbs 31:3, Lemuel says, "Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings." The word strength is the Hebrew word kayil, and evidently comprehends army, force, strength, wealth, virtue, or valor, and is translated many different ways. America began with our founding fathers pledging their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor, their strength, if you will, their wherewithal, in defense of liberty from a tyrannical King George. Unfortunately, whatever honorable place we found in the sight of other nations around the world has been thrown to the wind since we began yielding our strength to the evolving Antichrist religious, political, and economic tyranny. Perhaps no example demonstrates this message better than the biblical account of Samson, son of Manoah, of the tribe of Dan, who became infatuated with a harlot named Delilah, this occurring around 1140 B.C., their relationship recorded in Judges chapter 16. The story goes that the lords of the Philistines approached Delilah to enlist her support in discovering the source of Samson's great strength, for which they offered Delilah 1,100 pieces of silver, and for which she agreed to betray her lover. Three times she pled with Samson for the secret, but his answers were proven to be false when, after he'd fall asleep, she would bind his hands according to his instructions, only to find that he could still tear himself free when she'd cry out, "The Philistines be upon thee, Samson," as if she really wanted to warn him of imminent danger. We'll pick up the story at Judges chapter 16 at verse 15, and we'll just read a few verses. "And she said unto him, How canst thou say, I love thee, when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these three times, and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. And it came to pass, when she pressed him daily with her words, and urged him, so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he told her all his heart, and said unto her, There hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak, and be like any other man." And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up this once, for he hath showed me all his heart." Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand. And she made him sleep upon her knees, and she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the seven locks of his head, and she began to afflict him, to depress him maybe, and his strength went from him. And she said, "The Philistines be upon thee, Samson." And he awoke out of his sleep and said, "I will go out as at other times before and shake myself." And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. But the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. He was apparently ordered to grind meal. Now, having the benefit of hindsight, readers of this story wonder how Samson could have been so stupid as to trust a woman whose foremost concern was economic gain and who would surely sell him out for the right price. Thank God that none of us are that dumb. Well, you're now waiting for me to remind you how Delilah sold us out in the several bank panics of the 1800s, and how she finally took all of our monetary gold in the crash of 1929 to 1938. Being highly educated, of course, we Americans could never be fooled again until Babylon the harlot confiscated all of our monetary silver in 1965. Here's our music. This is another break. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy. You are listening to Datum Line, Economic Myths and the Science of Deceit, Part 33. Welcome back to the final segment of Datum Line. We're talking about Delilah and the kind of Delilah who sold us out. Did we learn anything from those repeat performances? Heck no. We signed up for car loans, home mortgages, home equity loans for a family trip to Disney World, checking accounts, savings accounts, Christmas clubs, and even the debit cards. The life of a high-tech GPS and cell phone toting, calling, texting, and internet-savvy American is an illuminated billboard, while we insist on a right to privacy in a world of government-sponsored terror to which we voluntarily yielded our strength. As God tallies the scorecard, this does not look good. The prophet Habakkuk wondered how long the servitude to moneylenders would continue before the slaves to bank credit collapsed under the weight of loan contracts made of thick clay. Likewise, the Lord Jesus must be wondering how bad things will have to get before we finally connect the dots between cause and effect. It's our allegiance, our energy, and our productive wealth that feed the tyrannical harlot we voluntarily embrace. And it all began when we chose not to question her religious, political, and economic mythology. With that having been said, let's unravel yet another economic myth taught as gospel truth by those who confiscated our gold and silver. Turning to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, publication called Coins and Currency, page 11, published in January 1981, we find these words. Quote, in the late 1950s, rising world demand for silver as an industrial metal began pushing up its price. Now we're going to hear their solution. In 1965, Congress eliminated silver from the quarters and dimes and reduced the silver content in half dollars from 90% to 40%. Silver was eliminated from halves entirely in 1970, so says the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Well, upon reading that statement back in 1981, I called the New York Fed to discuss what seemed to be a significant point of error, one that left my respondent in the public information section virtually speechless. Here's the argument. If rising world demand for silver began pushing up the price of silver, which must include the price of silver coins, then this statement of fact must be predicated on a so-called law of supply and demand. To understand such a law, we must first know the definition of supply and demand. Supply is all goods and services available for purchase in the marketplace. But what is demand? Demand is the desire for all of these goods and services, accompanied by the method of payment. Desire alone has no impact upon the price of anything. You may want a new computer with a greedy passion, but the price remains unchanged. If, however, that computer is the only one for sale at the auction, its price will be directly affected by how much you and others bid at the auction to express your desire to own that computer. As a general rule, the method of payment that accompanies our emotional desire is called money, a word that begs for understanding. And what was the lawful money still being used in the 1950s and early 1960s that could have purchased silver for industrial applications? Gold, you remember, had been officially demonetized in 1934 and no longer circulated as money in the United States. The only remaining lawful money, pursuant to the Constitution and Coinage Act, was silver. Do you see a problem here? Evidently, the purchasing agents of industry were offering so much silver to buy the silver that the price of silver was going up. So much so that Congress and the Federal Reserve had to take the silver, our silver, out of the coins, our coins, so that industry corporate fascist industry could have enough silver, our silver. Here was another ruse hatched by the elite robber barons who would make Elm Street liable for the bailout of Wall Street. But silver prices were rising, it might be argued. So how could we account for this phenomenon? As Henry Dunning McLeod liked to point out in A History of Banking in All the Leading Nations, published in 1896, credit has the same effect on prices as an equal quantity of money, gold or silver. Industry was not bidding money to buy silver during the 1950s and 60s. It was bidding credit to purchase silver. Probably the last time big business paid out any silver coins was when in the 1960s, Eastern Airlines, now deceased, paid all of its Miami-based employees in pre-1935 dollar-weight coins, erroneously called silver dollars, to demonstrate their importance to the local economy. You can just imagine how those coins would have impacted the local clerks who had no place in their cash registers dedicated to these huge coins, which Eastern Airlines had to specifically order from the Federal Reserve. Eastern Airlines, by the way, was the only airline not receiving a federal subsidy. Credit is the favorite tool of corporate empires and has become far more plentiful than silver coin during the Cold War military spending boom of the 1950s and early 1960s. Credit exerted a tremendous influence on prices, for which the Marxist bankers and many of their critics have blamed silver, or else God, for failing to create enough of it. The supply of credit, which promised to pay silver, as we've explained before, greatly exceeded the sum of monetary silver that the unscrupulous bankers had in their vaults to redeem those notes and checks that were leveraged against the money. This, of course, was fraud and theft, but it was made legal by acts of Congress in a not-so-Christian USA. The supply of industrial silver was real, but the economic demand was artificial. Just as adrenaline can energize your body to abnormal levels, credit artificially stimulates a nation and its economy, and both will eventually produce exhaustion. Your body and the economy will demand and eventually get the healing needed from a complete rest. The Bible calls it a Sabbath, and every 7 years, the Sabbath of rest lasts for an entire year. Media conceals the counterfeit healing event under another name, an economic meltdown. In Leviticus chapter 26, we're told that the land will get its rest one way or another. And an economic meltdown is the default setting of a credit system when the power goes out. Wait and see. In our next broadcast, I think we'll move on to another silver-related myth. And that one was also put forth by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in the same publication. It has to do with how the U.S. Treasury was going to acquire 4.5 million ounces of silver every month. And this was back in the 1890s. In fact, for about 3 years, they acquired this much silver, apparently. We'll find out how they did it. We will then probably be doing some summarizing later on of the various myths that we've covered thus far. I have, I think, quite a few more myths to go. And if, again, I haven't covered all of the myths that you think we need to, or if I haven't covered them adequately, you can email me, but don't expect an immediate response because I'm extremely slow. I have given a new meaning to snail mail, and I do it by way of email. It usually takes a couple of weeks sometimes for me to answer my emails. So please be patient. But if you have any concerns that you don't think we have covered adequately in this series, and you'd like me to expand upon them in some way, I will attempt to do so. But I want to make sure that before we go on to what most people want is the solutions, that we have put to rest all of the myths that people cling to. Because I certainly don't want to try to approach this subject in terms of what we do about it, with people having in their mind or in the back of their mind, yeah, but. I want to take care of all of those yeah, buts as best I can. Anyway, we'll also be covering in our next broadcast an article that appeared in an American Free Press back in July. It was July 29th, and it was entitled Constitution Unable to Rein in Big Government. I want to spend some time with that. This was written by Kenneth W. Royce, who seems to put out a challenge, and I'd like to answer that challenge. He says, I'd like to be refuted from a true desire to be wrong about all of this. Somebody please show me any definitive evidence disproving my contentions that federal expansion and intrusion is subject to no real practical enforceable constitutional limits, and two, the circumstantial historical evidence clearly supports the Constitution being conceived, planned, debated, ratified, and executed with the goal of relentless, unstoppable federal expansion at the expense of the states, the people, and freedom in general. Well, I have a hard time with that one. I don't believe that our founding fathers intended federal expansion, the likes of which we have. And so I want to answer this challenge. And if you think I'm wrong in terms of my answer, then you can also correct me, and you can do that by way of email. You can email me at, datumline2@gmail.com. Okay. Here's our music. I'm Bruce G. McCarthy. This has been Datum Line, Economic Myths and the Science of Deceit, Part 33. I hope it has been of interest to you. Thank you for listening, and have a good day. So long.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now, or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraine, Ltd. at Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
BlackoutCoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time.
If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it?
That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung K, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
की बात आज में says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence the facts and the truth about race and the fact that race drives history and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQRS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, you know.
How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act, the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. And one of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-ies meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-ies meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.